Turn your tax refund into a new garage door at Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Increase your home's value with a new Ideal garage door. From traditional to modern, Menards has a garage door to enhance your home's appearance. Choose from our large in-stock selection or design your own using our free garage door design program. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was the time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies. Feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
We continue here out at East River 9. Sean's out here with me. You can see Sean and I on YouTube and Twitter as well as we continue our broadcast day here, celebrating the Masters. And while golf normally puts me to sleep, I gotta admit, I checked out on the Rockets game right around when I saw them up by double digits in the second quarter. It's like, all right, time to take a sleep aid, time to go to sleep. So, and it takes a couple, an hour or two for it to work its way until I immediately fall asleep after that two-hour span. And then I wake up in the morning and go, huh, did I see a moment where Kevin Durant missed two free throws and the Rockets were only up by five and it mattered? Now, they did get a stop, and they scored when Kevin Durant was left wide open. You can see Nick Nurse exasperated as his team just leaves the most potent threat open. He knocks down a three, puts the game away. Kevin Durant might catch a fine, though. He did the rifle celebration pointing at the Sixers bench. He may catch a fine because we can't mimic guns anymore in the NBA.
I did catch that, and I was like, was it abstract enough to where was it clearly a gun, or was it like...
He
had the scope.
Yeah, the scope at least. Like, you can see guys...
And this hand was
a
trigger.
You can't pull a trigger when you're... Yeah. You can point, but Nico still does the first down stuff, but he's done it in a way where you know what he's doing, but it's enough is ambiguity so you don't find him. NBA players have done it. Ja Morant now goes for a grenade when he actually plays. He throws a grenade sometimes when he knocks down a shot because, hey, you didn't say anything about ordinances or grenades. I don't know if artillery will be something he does.
Yeah,
but
rocket launcher.
Yeah, something, which would be apropos for the Rockets. So maybe Kevin Durant puts a surface-to-air contraption on his shoulder, however he wants to do it. But they win. The offense bogged down in the second half. They only scored 40 points, and they were not great, particularly in the fourth quarter, only 17. They get outscored by 12 in that fourth quarter and still win the game by 11. So that was how dominant they were. That second half flies in the face of some numbers the Rockets have accumulated since at least in the midst of the winning streak. They have moved the ball better. They're passing the ball more. It has been a change that maybe is a little subtle to some people, but I'll be talking about it. They're, they're setting more flare screens and things like that. But passes per game, they're not high. They're still only 23rd in the league passes per game over the course of their winning streak before last night. Going into last night, seven games in a row, 23rd in the league, but they had passed the ball. 23rd in the league before the winning streak. Let me correct that. 23rd in the league before the winning streak. Now 7th. So a big jump as far as passes per game. And they're also number one in the NBA over the same span when it comes to taking shots in the shot clock very early, like within 2 seconds of the shot clock starting. That's from fast breaks and other things. But
tip-ins. Like, to get a shot up in 2 seconds.
That quickly. Yeah. You're not generally getting a rebound and getting a shot up. That's from tip-ins. That's from maybe a steal, run-out, stuff like that. But they are playing a little bit faster, and it's working to their benefit. that second half notwithstanding, and they get the win. They don't gain any ground because the Lakers, with LeBron, go, and only LeBron, it feels like, considering guys we actually care about, they go into San Francisco and beat the Warriors. So it's still set up where they're going to need to at least beat the Lakers by one game over the final two to secure home court. The Lakers have Utah and Phoenix.
Two games that are like, you know.
Phoenix doesn't have anything to play for.
Yeah.
They're locked into the seventh seed.
Lakers can mess around and win both these games. This is what we talked about when the Luka and Reeves injuries came down, was like, there's actually not enough time for it to, like, definitely play a factor just with the end of the schedule. And it's like, yeah, if they win one of these games, like the Warriors last night, they win one of these games that you kind of view as a toss-up, they might just win out or win enough games to stay the four seed.
Yeah, the Warriors game last night was the one where you could see the Rockets using that as a springboard to close it out, win their final two after they beat the Sixers and then have home court. It looks like how it's slated, as long as the Lakers don't, as Rafael Stone would say, trick off. Or was that Ime? Maybe it was Rafael.
No, it was Rafael.
Rafael Stone said trick off.
After year one of Ime Udoka.
Yeah. As long as the Lakers do what they're supposed to, the Rockets will be starting their playoff series in L.A., which is fine. They have the clear advantage. They'll be the favorite to win it. The question is, when it comes to the playoffs, beyond the fact of strategy and how you're going to play your opponent, who becomes the most annoying Laker? Like, it's going to happen. Particularly if it goes long and they win a couple games that you don't think they had any business winning, we're going to find, like, LeBron is set aside as the guy no one's going to like. But without Luka, without Austin Reeves, who's going to be the most annoying Laker for Rockets fans in this series? There are some choices. Like, for whatever reason, generally a white guy rises to the top of the charts.
I had pegged Jake LaRavia or as like a, I don't know, feels like a guy who would be annoying.
Like, he's got no business making plays, things like that.
It's like he has one game where he's like, you know, kind of good. You're Brandon Podziemski level good.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, what does this guy do?
he's not supposed to have any effect on the series. Well,
number 12.
So that's a good choice. They do have a more veteran white guy on the team, and Luke Kennard, he made a couple plays, knocked down some shots last night against the Warriors. And J.J. Redick, who is one of those guys himself when he played, he talked about Luke Kennard, and J.J. understands how people talk about shooters like himself. And maybe this is how we'll be talking about Luke Kennard as that series gets started. Here's J.J. Redick.
I mean, it's easy because he's a white guy that shoots threes to just think he's just a shooter. That's just the reality of the situation. I'm sure every time he, you know, checked into an AAU tournament in eighth grade, everybody screamed, shooter, shooter, shooter. That's the life we have. That's the life we chose. I watched him a ton at Duke and, you know, got to know him during the pre-draft process. Had a couple phone calls with him just talking through things and competed against him. So, you know, I've known for a long time that there's a lot to his game and there's a lot he can do as a basketball player, primarily as a playmaker. I mean, he really does such a good job of using his shooting as a threat, using his change of speed and pace as a threat, and then just consistently makes the right play.
He is going to be in a more prominent role, so that is someone the Rockets have to focus on as that likely series gets going. Now, the Warriors didn't even play Steph last night, so they punted on that game, and really the rest of the regular season, we'll see what they do as a 10 seed in the play-in. So the Lakers get their win. LaRavia's a good choice. Luke Kennard is, like, this is supposed to be who Dalton Connect is, but he's been a first-round bust. Luke Kennard is there because Dalton Connect isn't the guy they wanted him to be.
It is, like, the direct, you know, failure of Dalton Connect in that pick that they had to go out and get Luke Kennard to play that same exact role of white guy shooter.
Yeah.
I don't know if they limited to just white guys. They might have kicked the tires on other guys.
It could have been another person. It just so happens that
if the Malik Beasley investigation went away.
It could have been anyone. It just happens that Luke Kennard was their choice, and now he's going to be starting. They're of little concern. Look, we talked about it yesterday. This should be a series that if it goes six, we're maybe asking some questions. But with LeBron And J.J. Redick has developed game plans for the Rockets in the past. We saw it when they came to town, how he did some specific things to limit the Rockets. Now, of course, he had the benefit of having the offensive firepower of Luka and Austin Reeves at his disposal. Not going to be the case unless whatever happens in, I guess Luka's in
Spain?
Spain.
Yeah.
Someone said Luka ain't slick. He just went to Europe to watch Bayern versus Real Madrid. Maybe he took that in as well. Yeah. But the story is he went there to find some treatment that he couldn't find here to try to pick up or at least speed up his recovery. It doesn't appear he'll be ready for that Lakers-Rockets series if that comes about. But the matchups as it goes feels like the Rockets really lucked out. They played really good basketball recently. They got the injury luck for the Lakers. And now I'm not going to jump to let's see the Thunder in the second round, because you got to get, or the Spurs in the second. It would be the Thunder 4-5.
Thunder 4-5.
I'm not there yet. I like to see how they play against the Lakers, but sometimes you need a little luck.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're going to get it. And the question is, does what we've seen so far over the last 8 games now translate when you are being specifically game planned for it? The Sixers did not have Joel Embiid last night. We did talk about yesterday how dangerous the Sixers could be if they could ever be healthy. And look, hours later, their most important player has appendicitis.
Like maybe 2 hours later,
yeah,
after we said that.
Yeah.
Like it was very fast that I was like, oh, appendicitis, and he's getting operated on in Houston. And I mean, for the Sixers, that probably affects – I mean, if they play in the play-in, it definitely affects his availability for that. Probably affects his availability at the start of any series that they play in. So, yeah, you catch another lucky – you know, somewhat lucky break there. I don't know if – I mean, I guess it ended up being whatever, 5-point game with 50 seconds left, but it was also a 25-point game in the third quarter.
One of those games where you can clearly say the final score does not really.
It's what we talked about yesterday, or maybe the day before, with like the Rockets' conversion rate of like the like currency conversion of, well, if the Rockets are 14 for a regular team, that's like being up 5. You know, like that's kind of, you just build in like there's going to be an 11-0 run at some point in this fourth quarter, that where the Rockets turn the ball over and have a horrible possession for 4 straight possessions, and the other team makes a couple threes, and like, all right, now this is a game that, you know, you regret taking the sleep aid in the middle of the
I didn't
third quarter.
Regret it. It's still the Sixers Rockets on a Thursday night.
It's still mostly meaningless.
I would have. Yeah, it's mostly meaningless. They still won that game by double digits. It would have been better for me if I saw how they got to that point. I had to go rewatch at the time, but or at least early this morning to see how it got to that point. But yeah,
you've seen this game.
I've seen it.
I was actually
about 40
that.
Times this year.
Yeah, I was trying to guess how many times I've seen this exact Rockets game play out. Maybe not up 25, but up comfortably in the third quarter. Like, you know, the kind of close to start, pull ahead in the second and third quarter. And then it's like emergency landing, you know, Sully Sullenberger in the fourth quarter. I was thinking like, well, they have 50 wins, and not every win was like this. I think it is. I think the number is like 35, and especially because there are a few games like that that they end up losing. So it is like maybe half their season are games that track like this.
Yeah, I think the number is less as far as Kevin Durant missed free throws in moments.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean,
those are more prominent than I would have imagined, too.
OKC game one.
Yeah, it started very early. And there have been other times where you think, oh, he's just up there, and it's Kevin Durant. He's going to make a couple free throws.
Let me check my phone.
Yeah, and then he misses. And you're like, oh, okay, you need a stop here. And they did get that stop, and they took care of the Sixers, who did not have Joel Embiid in the lineup. So 8 in a row, the offense is playing faster. They're moving the ball more than they have certainly before this run, and now we wait. A couple more games to go. All you're looking for, of course, are the wins, but more importantly, get out of these games with your health, because we've seen how that has directly affected teams late in the year.
There still is a chance that they are the 3 seed.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's a funny situation where for so much of the season, you're like, got to get out of the 4-5. You don't want to play OKC. Yada, yada, yada. And then now the last – they, you know, get the season back on track. They've won 8 straight games. And it's like, well, you don't want to win too many that you end up being the 3 seed all of a sudden. And to me, it's like I even yeah, again, when you're up 20, these are the thoughts I'm having during a game of like, so do you, like, try to tank one of these games to make sure you're in the 4-5 and that Denver can't tank out of the 3 seed to get into the 4-5 to get that easy Lakers matchup? Because if you're gaming it out from a Denver perspective, you want the Lakers matchup and to play the OKC Thunder first, right? Or as earlier, right? And instead of having to go through Minnesota, then the Spurs, and then the Thunder to get out.
So the Nuggets and Thunder play today. So if you're
OKC, I think you try to tank it. So they can't be in the...
Yeah, you want to keep the Spurs and the Nuggets lined up
for
a matchup in the second round, so you only have to see one of them.
But OKC is one of those teams where I'm like, even if they are trying to tank, or even if they are like, hey, we're only playing the back of our rotation, those guys are pretty good. Like, those guys might be
able
to...
Now, they are playing playing the Nuggets who have been playing at their best, so maybe even the guys who are pretty good won't have enough. But yeah, if you're OKC, you are saying, hey, we'll take the winner of Rockets Lakers every day over having to go through the Nuggets and the Spurs.
If Denver and OKC are both trying to tank, I kind of think Denver will be more effective.
Denver has less talent when it comes to guys who have to play because you only want to play 6 or 7 guys.
Yes.
Though it'll be one of those situations which you've seen in the past where some guy who we've never really seen play a lot plays 45 minutes because we're just not going to put these other guys in.
14 threes.
And if it's OKC guys, they've got a real shot to win that game as opposed to the Nuggets who are awful without Jokic on the floor. Just imagine if Jokic, Murray, Gordon aren't playing, their backups aren't comparable to the Thunder backups.
And that's basically all you have to sit for it to make like a real difference.
You can roll out Strother who's out of the rotation from time to time. I don't think Peyton Watson's even healthy. So
you got the Browns.
Yeah, you can roll the Browns out there. Bruce Brown didn't even play against the Spurs.
Oh, yeah. So maybe he can't.
so he was out of the rotation. So you can play him and lose that game while the Thunder are playing guys like Jared McCain just to give him more shots.
Like Jared McCain's the guy that's like he's probably going to be out of the postseason rotation barring an injury. You know, got AJ Mitchell who turned into like a 12-minute guy game in the postseason. It's like if the Rockets had a guy like AJ Mitchell or Jared McCain, like I mean, they probably have like 55 wins instead of. You know, more, 52 the ugly way.
They had better guard depth that they can depend on and maybe not have to play Amen Thompson 40-plus minutes in a game where they were blowing out the Sixers.
Hey, you know how, like, Aaron Holiday has been closing the last couple games? What if that was A.J. Mitchell or McCain?
Yeah, so it is why I had already come to the realization, like a lot of people, that the Thunder were just going to be a problem. It's why when I said, oh, the Spurs are an issue too, that's unfortunate because you talk about the depth the Thunder have accrued and they still have all those draft picks. The Spurs have hit on their draft picks, and, of course, they have Wimby. So it's tough sledding, but, hey, you get your shot, and you catch a break with that first-round series. We're here out at East River 9. The entire station will be out here till 6. We'll be followed by Brian and Sean. They'll do a show together from 12 to 3, and then it'll be the Jeremy and Joe from 3 to 6. Michael Carroll will join us at 11:30, so I know people sometimes save their calls to talk to him. If that's your plan, that's okay. But if you want to get in before, then 713-780-3776. AJ is back in studios. He did a great job at the morning show. He'll be with us until noon. You should be as well. We will be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
we were talking in the first segment about how this upcoming likely series against the Lakers would play out and who would turn out to be the most annoying Laker. And Jackie said, at least DFS won't be hitting threes against us. Yeah, if he was playing for the Lakers, he probably would have knocked down certainly more shots and had a better percentage than he's done for the Rockets so far this year.
Yeah.
I could have seen that guy being someone we got annoyed with.
I mean, also, who was the name of the text or Twitter?
Jackie.
Jackie, could, I don't think he's a Lakers fan. Could also be a Lakers fan saying, hey, at least we don't have to worry about DFS making threes against
yeah,
us.
Yeah, Jackie would have to clear it up. I don't believe so.
No,
I don't believe
no, but neither team needs to worry about DFS making threes
yeah.
against the.
I mean,
the based Rock, on recent the, history.
The biggest worry for the Rock would be him actually attempting them right now.
Yeah, exactly.
We prefer he didn't. And he's one of those guys, and his lack of performance is one of the reasons minutes are so high for some of their wing guys, because he was supposed to be part of this rotation.
Yeah.
And that has not bore out. The Rockets somehow, some way, despite some of the bad form from DFS and Tari's fluctuation in shooting, they're still on track to win 52 games. If they want to play it out, they'll get there. So it has been an odd year because we spent a lot of time talking about why aren't they playing at a certain level, and yet they're going to win 53. Excuse me, could be 53 wins.
Yeah, and since the team meeting against Memphis, they have figured it. Like they have like
something
has had changed.
I don't know if play better is simply something you can say in a meeting and it happens.
I mean,
we've talked about the more ball movement. Shooting the ball faster, that has helped. And there are certain portions of the schedule where it's laid out in a fortunate way for them. But I don't know.
It has kind of just been play better.
Yeah, they have simply played better and shot the ball better. Not so much last night in the second half, but shooting the ball from three the way they have will help you play better as well. So I'm always someone who goes, let's see over the course of a season how things play out to determine what is something and what isn't. Well, they could only do what they could do in the short amount of games that they had, and they've excelled. Now we wait and see.
And it's funny that we spent a lot of time being like, they are on pace to be around the same amount of wins that they were last year, but also last year they went on a huge run in March
to get to that number.
And, you know, what from basically January till late March, we're like, do you think that run is coming?
No, it didn't seem like it.
And
and then the run comes in the final stretches of the year where
it might be a 10-game win streak.
Going into the playoffs where they would wind up winning 53 games. Now, winning 53 games this season as opposed to 52 last year, just the West, the better teams, I guess you want to say better health, the fact that the Spurs are where they are. But the Rockets would go from a 2 seed winning 52 games to a 5 winning 53. It was bunched up last year. Like, they're the 2, but 3, 4, and 5 all won 50 games. And 6, the Wolves won 149. The Warriors won 48. So it was a better West from, like, 1 through 7 or so, or 1 through 8. But as far as the top guns, the Spurs have been the giant jump, and then – and then you have the Nuggets and Lakers and Rockets.
To me, that can just be mostly explained by, well, since, what, like February 15th, a third of the league has been trying to lose. So, like, you know, same with the Eastern Conference and Western Conference, where it's like, I don't know, like all the good teams' wins, I feel like, are inflated just a little bit. Maybe just an extra game or two for each team, just because you have, like, these horrific teams at the bottom, and everyone kind of gets a turn playing them that you didn't have last year. And, you know, that's just a year-to-year thing that, you know, next year, looking ahead, probably won't have that. Even without lottery form, I don't know if teams are going to be as aggressive tanking, given, A, the protection pick protection stuff going on for teams like the Jazz and Wizards, or the draft class quality, perceived quality, looking ahead to next year versus this year. That, you know, I kind of think that is a factor that we don't really think about that is probably very temporary.
And tanking has been and will continue to be a subject of conversation because of how uncompetitive some or non-competitive some of these late games, late season games have been. Yeah. Well, apparently Adam Silver, of all the tanking proposals that have come across his desk, the one he reacted most favorably to is the one where you actually don't get rewarded for being the worst team. Like, in fact, you wind up with a worse chance of being the guy, the team against the number one pick, if you have the worst record, to promote teams actually fighting to stay out of that seed as opposed to losing to land there.
And opening up the lottery, right? Is this part of it, or is that solution B? I forgot, like, which one is what, but opening up the lottery to include more teams that I think it's just the play-in teams that make the playoffs, so you're adding two per conference. I think that's the...
So, as it stands now, it would increase the lottery from 14 to 18 teams.
Yeah, okay.
And it would involve drawing for each of the 18 picks rather than just the top four, as is the case now.
That's also a bonkers one to, like, think about, because right now they only draw the top four. So, if you have the worst record in the league and you don't get a lottery ball drawn, you have the fifth pick.
Yeah.
And this one, like, you could, in theory, fall all the way to, what, 18?
That would be a tough result for a season.
But I also think, like, if we're being honest with ourselves, it's not that hard to be the fourth worst team in the league. Like, to improve enough to not be the worst team in the league. Like, that the Rockets signed Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet and went from a 25-win team to a 41-win team. Also hired a new coach.
Yeah.
But, like, they still had a bunch of 21-year-olds. Like, it's not impossible to win 36 games and not be the worst team in the league.
Does this set up a play-out tournament where you, I guess you say, if it's solidified that these are going to be the worst teams in the league at the end of the season, you have them...
Trying to tank out of
Instead of tank out, you win games to get yourself out of a spot where you lose the best spot to take the number one overall pick the number one overall pick.
I don't know the exact... numbers, and it probably hasn't even been finalized with the proposal, but you basically have to do it as like a bell curve where it's like the top three have a slightly worse chance, the whatever play-in teams also have a slightly worse chance, and like 4 through 10 have the better chances, but you do have to stagger it out to where being the 7 seed isn't worse than being the 9 seed by enough to where you wanted to lose that play-in spot. So it really does have to be like the sweet spot is to be the 5th worst team in the league, which is a hard target to hit because it's moving so much more, which would deter, like, I mean, some of the more nefarious, like, openly tanking stuff that we see. But teams are just going to be bad. Like, that is just a thing that happens.
Just teams. Yeah, teams.
Like, teams will
just
be bad.
For all time, they're just going to be teams that, like, are bad, even when they don't want to be. Even the, like, Kings didn't want to be bad, and then now they have leaned into it in a way where they're being investigated for a foul call.
And their defense, it has to be, our coach is a moron.
We're incompetent.
which might play to a certain
judge and jury.
Yeah.
Okay, but Christie doesn't know what he's doing. You got us there.
Because he's done it before in other games, too, where it's not as like, wait, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, so if you don't know, the Kings fouled up one with about, 3 minutes ago?
Yeah, right, because it was more than 3 minutes ago, because when the three-minute mark
hits, you lose a timeout.
Yes, and so they wanted to use that timeout.
Yes, he wanted to get that timeout in, use it or lose the timeouts. So he instructed his team to foul while still in the bonus. The unfortunate thing was they fouled Seth Curry. Not Steph, but Seth, who is still an 84% free throw shooter.
Yeah.
So they went from being up one to down two, and then it calls into question your willingness to win because of how bad they've been. And they tried to explain it away by saying, we wanted that timeout. Also, our guys fouled the wrong person.
And they didn't know that they were in the bonus. That was part of it, is that, like, we didn't know we were in the bonus.
For all time, we've seen there's a coach who's supposed to be on top of those things to let the head coach know. While the head coach might be in the midst of it, the emotions of directing guys, I get it. But there's a guy.
Yeah, that's sitting there.
That knows all those things, that gives you those stats.
Guys on the couch can sit and look at the scoreboard. Yeah, scoreboard. It is the bonus.
You know, it's funny because we watch so many games from home that when you do go watch a game live, like I went to the Gold Cup, great showing by the U.S. national team. I went to the Gold Cup final here, the one that they lost 2-1, and you just and they didn't really show replays in the building, so my TV sports watching brain is expecting to see a graphic to alert me about this and that, and you don't really get it. So you could see how that could not be relayed.
Yeah.
But there are people's job. There's that's your job.
10 guys
as being an assistant to know those things.
Yeah.
If we have a specific guy to watch to see if we should challenge something, there's probably a guy to tell the coach that they're in a bonus and how many timeouts they have.
Yeah, I would love to be the timeout guy. I would hate to be the replay guy.
While everyone's looking at you and you're like, because
it's a lot of pressure because you have like 5 seconds.
Yeah, you
to look
have
at
to
it,
be able to look at and
go,
it and go
thumbs down, thumbs up as Alperen Şengün is like imploring you.
Yeah, but with Alperen, it's like it's boy who cried wolf.
I would have a standing order of like, it got to be really bad for me to wave the finger for an Alperen one.
Yeah, Ime had to be at the level calling one of those refs starstruck before I would actually take into account Alperen's ass for a review.
And whatever their system is, Ime's, I think, if he's not still the best at the challenge record, he's one of the best coaches with the challenge record, which is, I don't know if that's something that's like actually a skill or there just been more obvious calls to challenge in Rockets game.
Because, you know, and it becomes less important. At least it is deemed less important in the NBA. Like, we don't know. Like, a lot of people know if their head coach in the NFL is a bad challenge person because of what it means for a game, and they get reviewed constantly. Like, we get the reviews, and the broadcast might go away. Mm-hmm. If there's a challenge in the NFL, they generally stick with it. And if your coach is bad, the stat will immediately come up about he's 3-for-12 this year in challenges. So if he is good at it, cool. I wouldn't know.
They show the graphic that he's good at it. Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better. I guess it's better than a guy who's terrible at it. Sure,
you'd rather there are certain choices you'd have and want. You rather have the guy who's good at it as opposed to who's bad at
it. I'm sure there is. I mean, there has to be a coach in the NBA that's the worst at it. I don't want that guy.
Yeah, but are you like the NFL where those guys can range in the 30% range, or are you bad because you're at 65 behind all the other coaches? Yes. Yeah. All right. We're here at East River 9, myself and Sean. The entire station's here until, well, we started at 7. We'll be here until 6. It'll be Sean and Brian from 12 to 3, and then you'll also have Jeremy and Joe from 3 to 6. So they're open at Birdie's, the Ice House, so if you want to get something to eat or drink, you can get that done. The weather's holding for now. I mean, the clouds are a little dark, and the wind's picking up a little bit, but if you want to come out here for a round, you can have a quick round of golf here at East River 9 as well, as we're here for the Masters. We'll continue to talk Rockets as we go forward, but also we'll get to the Astros because they got a series beginning today against the Mariners. Both teams not playing really well, and there's some numbers, a very succinct preview of that series that we'll get to when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So we're here at East River 9. The Astros are going to be in Seattle for their series beginning today against the Mariners. And I asked, could we avoid a day of bad news? And I think we got there. Nothing really bad happened. We didn't get a full projection of how long Christian Javier would be out. Some of you may say, hey, considering how he's pitched, I prefer that he wasn't available. But if you aren't thinking that way, no news on Christian Javier, so that's not bad news.
No news is good news.
No news is good news in this case when it comes to the projection for Javier's season as far as health. So he won't pitch for at least a little while. Spencer Arrighetti won't be available if you're hoping for him to be available, because he pitched last night for Sugarland. So Arrighetti's pitching well in Triple A. So at some point we could see him come up, but it won't be at least in Seattle. And when we talk about this series, but beyond the fact that the two teams aren't winning games right now, you got what you would call the stoppable force versus the movable object. This is courtesy of Cespedes Family Barbecue. You can see the whole tweet on their account. But the Astros have a team ERA of 6.05. If you're saying, wow, that's pretty bad, you're right. It's the worst in baseball.
It's the worst in baseball.
The Mariners, who just got swept by the Rangers, have a team OPS of 581. You might be saying, wow, that's really low. You're right. It's the worst in baseball. So that's where the stoppable force versus movable object comes in. It's a four-game series in Seattle. Your losing streak is at four. You've lost now five out of six. You lost two series in a row on the road against two teams no one expects much from. Seattle's a different story. They were the favorite to win the AL West. And the Astros were anywhere between second or third. I didn't see them fall beyond those points. Certainly not behind the A's. We're gonna get a series where everyone thinks this could be the series that flips it. Now there are going to be a lot of games after it, but I've seen that quite a bit. Now's the best time to figure some things out, and if you can get this series, things can start swinging in the right direction. I'm not a proponent of that, just because there are 130 plus games to go after that, so it's just going to be the marathon, not the sprint, the old cliche. But at some point, you'd like to see them win a series, they won the Red Sox series, split the Angels series. So far this year, they've only won one out of four series and have lost two. And the competition hasn't been great. This is supposed to be a step up. I would take a split. Just give me a split.
A split would be great.
Yeah.
I'd kind of take.
You thinking one?
Losing 3-1. Like, I would just kind of like, all right.
Don't get swept.
I mean. Just got swept by the Rockies.
I shouldn't be talking in those tones. Like, what do you mean, don't get swept? You just got swept by the Rockies.
Whatever, 5 out of 6 against the A's and Rockies. So it's like, it is a good spot for a turnaround, and you know that because I'm sure if you're a Mariners fan, you're looking at the Astros, and you're also thinking, this is a good spot for a turnaround. Like, yeah. So both teams are scuffling, and so that means for one of them, you think, all right, we got an easy, you know, we can wade into the waters of winning baseball starting this weekend. I mean, I think it is something where whatever happens, whichever team, either the Astros win the series or split, or the Mariners, like, both teams can look at this and be like, aha, you know, especially if it's a split. All right, we'll take that back on track. Like, we're no longer the worst at for the Mariners hitting, for the Astros pitching. Like, that is very possible, and it's ultimately pretty meaningless because based off the numbers, these are the worst two teams at each respective thing. It's just the jersey that they're wearing and the players. You think, oh, this is pretty impressive. But, you know, for the Rockies, wasn't that impressive. For the Rangers playing the Mariners, wasn't that impressive. So I think it's an interesting spot. I do ultimately think, like, there's 130 more games after this. Like, it's not that meaningful, but it's interesting. Interesting, but not meaningful.
Yes, just to see if they can have some good days over the next four.
You just need a good – like, you would even – or, okay, I won't say you. I would even take a good to, like, pretty good Emi Burrow start that comes in a loss just as, like, a – all right, the starting rotation isn't a complete flaming bag – of dog poop on my front door because I left it in Dell's front yard.
Once again, I would not set that pool on fire. I would just leave it as a reminder that, hey, you're a little disrespectful. These are the consequences of being disrespectful. So
it's the horse head in the bed.
Yeah, it's Emi, McCullers, and then I assume J.P. France, and then because that is being left blank as of now, and Burrow. So, yeah, if you could get Emi to back up his previous start with another one, you can say, okay, some of the things we expected of him are real, and he can get going, and then whatever you get from McCullers, you get from him. You never know.
And same goes for – and it's obviously would be just like a smaller sample size, but same thing goes for Brian Abreu. If you can get Brian Abreu,
yeah,
an ERA under 20, that'd be super sick.
That'd I want to see Abreu in a high leverage situation before that ERA gets under 20? Do I want him to use a ninth inning to try to get there? I know Espada will go to him. It's just what he will do. I'm just not sure I'm comfortable with it as it stands right now.
I mean, if you are going to get that ERA lower, like, it has to come in a high leverage spot. Like, there's not a ton of options to go to. You know, maybe you could make the case that if you're facing like 3-5 in the eighth inning of a close game that you're leading, you go Abreu there with the like backup of no, we wanted to face the heart of the order. But in the back of your mind's like,
we also didn't want him closing because he seems to be pretty bad at closing.
Look, and then have Brian King close.
I don't want him in a hold position, honestly, at this point.
It's so bad.
I want it to be 7-0, and he goes in there and gets a 1-2-3 inning, and that lowers the
just
ERA,
get some
too.
Work.
Yeah, just get some work in. Okay. I want a situation where the Astros' bats come alive, by the way. We haven't even mentioned they've only scored 2 runs over the last 2 games.
Not good.
So that needs to show up in Seattle.
Yeah.
Those numbers weren't a part of the tweet because at least the Astros going into the final 2 games against the Rockies were hitting the baseball. Hey, it could be 8-1. You roll Abreu out there for an inning to go. He's got the groove back. That's what I'm hoping for.
Okay.
I'm hoping for a calm night where the bats get going. Imai pitches well. You get at Hancock, who has pitched well so far this year. So I'm not promising anything. Emerson. I can't
one of
promise.
Our founding fathers.
it does sound like a name who put a signature on an important document from the 1700s.
He's John's little brother.
Yeah, yes. Well, is he one of those Hancocks? Do we need to look into that?
Of the Hancock?
He's from Cairo, Georgia, so I'm not sure how that played out. But, yeah, he has pitched well, so no promises as far as the bats get going. So maybe it's 5-1 and Abreu comes in. I'm just not looking for 2-1, 3-2, 3-1 where he needs to be on point for the Astros to win a game. It just hasn't proven that he's capable of that right now.
And you mentioned that the last 2 Rockies games they scored it was 1 run.
One run in both games, yeah.
I did see some like, well, the Rocky or playing in Colorado and Sacramento, like that's not a favorable situation for the pitchers, and like that could be a reason that the ERA is a little bit inflated. The fact that the Astros offense put up 1 run in it, that to me is just like you're not playing good baseball.
No, overall the entire team. Yeah.
I would take 13-9 losses and like okay, that's it's a little bit better. But if the hitting goes away, if the hitting was a mirage of the first week of the season, then you got serious problems. Even if the pitching gets a little bit better, just because without Hunter Brown, without Josh Hader for a little while for each of them, like. If you're not going to even win the shootouts, I don't see a ton of paths to victory if the Houston offense, falls back to earth a little bit.
I'm not ignoring you. I'm just because I was looking at you while you're talking. I'm currently going through the Rocky schedule from last year, at least the second half right now, and you're going, why the hell would you do that? I'm trying to see how many times an opponent only scored 1 run in Coors Field.
I assume it's rare.
I have. Through all the games of the second half of the season, not one time.
One or fewer?
Not one time so far in the second half of the year.
I mean, it's just a zero, so I'm not opening up a ton of different
possibilities. Yeah, did an opponent score 1 run or fewer? So the Astros, it's not historic because it's not a real stat, but doing something pretty special.
It's only 1 year.
Doing pretty special, something pretty special the last couple games when they did what they did.
Yeah.
By only scoring a run per game over the last couple games of that series.
And that to me is a little bit of like, is this a blip or is this like regression?
See, you get the first parts of the season, the early parts of the year, and go, wow, the bats are hot. That's a departure from what they were in the spring. And then you have the last several games, particularly the last two. I'm going to go with blip because at least the bats were hot over a longer period of time than what had happened in Denver the last 2 games. So, as it stands now, a blip. If Hancock puts it on them and the series goes away where the bats stay silent in Seattle, then we can have a conversation because now it's almost that you've been cold as long as you've been hot. So, there it is. All right, hour one is done. We have a couple more segments before we get to Michael Carroll, so we'll certainly talk more sports, but you know that segment's about TV and movies. So if you want to get in before that, you can call in 713-780-3776. We're out at East River 9. We'll be here. At least this show will be here till noon. Then Sean and Brian McDonald will take you to 3, and then Jeremy and Joe from 3 to 6. I do want to remind you that we're here for the Masters celebrating golf. You can celebrate golf with us as part of the Occasional Invitational. Go to ESPN975.com. Registration that goes to Sunday. So you just got a couple more days for that. And if you type in early bird promo, you get that promo price. So ESPN975.com is the website. The Occasional Invitational is April 29th at Sterling Country Club. If you're out there with us, it's a full day of golf, drinks, and you'll have lunch provided by Brown Bag Deli and dinner from Valencia's. And prizes for our top team. So if you got a good team, put them together, and you can win something from us. Sign up now for the Occasional Invitational at ESPN975.com. All right, hour one done. We'll be back with hour two when we get back.
ESPN 97.5.